Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Defense Deconstructed on the CGAI Podcast Network. I'm your host and Vice President of the Canadian Global Affairs Institute, Dave Perry. Today, we're going to be rebroadcasting a conversation held at our 5th Annual Defense Procurement Conference in Ottawa in October. The panel, moderated by Ian Brody, features the CBC's Murray Brewster, Michael Vandergrift from Public Services and Procurement Canada, Bill Matthews from the Department of National Defense, and the Canadian Association of Defense and Security Industries' Nicholas Todd, discussing how defense procurement success should be defined within the context of Canada's defense policy, Strong, Secure, Engaged.
I say that not to settle scores, although of course it settles scores. I say that to set the context for what I hope will be our discussion today. What would be success in delivering the White Paper's capital procurement plan, not in the near term and not worried about this quarter, next quarter, or the federal election? We have a plan that has 5-year, 10-year, and 15-year components to it. I want to keep our discussion today for the first session focused on what does success look like over that time period, trying to escape a little bit from the discussions that we have today. If we go 10 years in the future and look back, what will we have counted as success if we're able to make those factors work today? To take a look at Canadian Forces' package of capabilities in 2028, if we look back, what would we say was the success? Or what would we want to be able to say 10 years from now is a success, 15 years from now is a success if we can get there. We're very lucky to have a superb panel for discussing this. And so I wanted to start with you, Bill, if you could give us a view, since in many ways your job is to deliver the package of outcomes, not just the points along the way. What should we be looking for as a success package on this particular?
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate the comments on the policy, but can take no credit for it because I actually arrived for implementation. So it is all about implementation. In terms of successful points 10 years, 15 years out from now, it's all about capability. And you kind of touched on that in your mind. I think, you know, politics will always have short-term nature to it. There's always going to be discussions about dollars. And frankly, I find them a little frustrating, but I get it. The policy is about people. And the people piece includes making sure the men and women of the forces actually have the equipment they need to do what we want to do safely and efficiently and effectively. So I think the scorecard 10, 15 years, 20 years out is going to be what kind of capability they have. And having said that, you know, defense procurement in particular, always a hot button topic. We are always under a microscope, and you always are going to have these sort of day-to-day distractions. So trying to sort of keep your eye on the long run, ongoing challenge when you have this. I think the interesting triangle of things for me are around capability is first and foremost, but cost and schedule are equally important. I'm going to kind of drift into those for a minute. We do have a very complicated procurement system in Canada. Lots of players. PSCC is here. ISED is not here, but they have a role in terms of industrial benefits. And lots of players inside defense. And we're not going to apologize that we're more, you know, we do more competition than ours. That's no call get socioeconomic benefits out of it, again, no apologies, that's the system we're working with. But when we start talking capability and schedule, one of the changes I would hope to see as we go forward is that we are faster to actually get to what our real requirements are. So if you look at options analysis in defense, it takes a long time. And it takes a long time for a reason. We hang on to our assets for a long time. And so people really want to make sure they get it right. We've added governance to sort of challenge the requirements in the kind of panel to make sure that the requirements are valid. But I think when you look, yeah, there's money in the policy. Everything's funded, so the money's accounted for. And if you look at inflation and defense, delays cost you money. So, well, we have lots of contingency, et cetera. If we are looking backwards 10, 15 years from now, if I could look at making sure we get the right capabilities, but making sure we arrive at those answers faster, that would be kind of one of my key judgments. Costs, you know, it's not an unlimited budget. So if we go over on something, it comes at the expense of something else. And understanding what those trade-offs are at the right point in the governance process is absolutely critical. So we'll be looking to sort of accelerate option analysis. One of the instincts people have inside defense when they're doing option analysis is to slow down when there's not enough money. And what we actually want to do is pull those discussions forward so we can have a discussion early about, okay, you think your project's underfunded, let's talk about what capability you really need. And if the answer is you really need X, Y, and Z, let's talk about a funding change. Maybe we get it, maybe we don't. But the answer is not to sort of slow down and wait for the sky to rain money, because that's historically a reaction you've probably had inside the department. And defense inflation just eats away at your cost. So that's kind of what I would sort of judge. I would judge on capability, and if I'm going to get there, if I could fix one thing in the departments, I would probably lean towards accelerating an option. Michael's going to chat, I think, about some other broader changes happening inside the procurement system at large government, but we've got to sort of look at our part inside defense, and that would sort of be where I would start. I don't just stop there.
Mike, if you want to give us your end of this, and then I'll have some questions for you.
All right. Sure. Thanks, Ian. And thanks to Dave and CGI for organizing this event. That's obviously an important topic at this time. And thank you all for coming here to reflect on these questions and participate in the discussion. Our goal at PSPC is in the end of the day, to help the Canadian Armed Forces obtain the equipment, the capabilities, the services they need to deliver their jobs, to implement the objectives of strong, secure, engaged. As Bill said, it really is about capabilities, it's about implementation now. Of course, there are other objectives at play, driving economic benefits, supporting Canadian, leveraging procurements into investments in key industrial capabilities in the Canadian economy. We also want to procure goods and services in a fair, open, and transparent way. We work within legislation, we work within regulatory frameworks, work within treasury board policies. We must, you know, follow these objectives as we pursue our procurements. But as Bill said, there's a lot of interest in this. It's a hot-button topic. There's pressures from all sides. It really does take a thoughtful approach, procurement by procurement, as to the best strategy to achieve the objectives. You know, there are lots of indicators that we look at. Obviously, on time, on scope, on projects. Obviously, really key indicator in terms of success. There's indicators that we follow and report on. Numbers of competitive processes, for example. Timelines to turn around contracts. We're working on developing some new indicators, things like, you know, competitions with more than one bidder, the nature of the competitions we're able to have in Canada. Also looking at supplier views on the process. From my mind, I think the biggest thing to focus on, which I want to talk a little bit about, is also how we can innovate in the system. We can look at the system, look at our procurement strategies, and find ways to improve. And there's a number of things we're trying to do now that we're quite excited about, I'll just mention a couple of them. We can talk more about them in the conversation. One of them is for example, moving to kind of phase bid compliance or cure periods. In the past, we would have had a failed procurement if the bidder didn't meet the mandatory requirements, or their bid would have been tossed out. Only one bid would have failed procurement. Now we're trying to create processes where there's a chance for bidders to repair that bid, to update it to meet the requirements, for a chance to meet the requirements, allow the competition to proceed, to keep things moving. Trying to move to more outcomes-based procurements. Ian, we were talking earlier about the IDEAS program that National Defense is now running through a strong security engagement. Really trying to get to outcomes. What are the problems we're facing? What is industries and suppliers' best ideas sustainment initiative is one probably many in this room are familiar with. We're trying to move on away from traditional ways of doing in-service support contracts and instead taking a look at the business case and trying to have more flexible, innovative contract arrangements where we reward performance, where there's opportunities for both government and suppliers to share in opportunities and savings in the way they deliver in-service support. And maybe last I'll mention is we're really moving now within PSDC to have an e-procurement tool. So many of our processes are still amazingly paper-based. Our ability to kind of collect data, to understand data, to help it inform our business processes is challenging at times. We're really, really excited about initiatives to move to a modern e-procurement that allow us to drive greater value, I think, out of the data that we have to help inform our practices and processes and improvements. So I'll leave it there, Ian, and I think you...
Can I just, before we go on, since the two of you spoke to the two different sides of the public sector part of this, are we sure that we've got the people to pull this off on the procurement and planning side? It only struck me in government that there have been generational changeovers, that there's ebbs and flows of procurement volume, that working on the major capital projects is not like necessarily buying reams of photocopy paper or fax machines or whatever we do. I've gone back to the education and training side of the business. In the course of my first or 5 years back at university, I haven't yet found a student to tell me that when he or she graduates, they want to work and want to be a military procurement professional for the next 25 years. I'd really like to go work between B&B and PSDC and devote a career to improving the military procurement. Everybody has that as a wish, but nobody wants to commit their own career to that. Can you talk a little bit about, maybe not at the executive level here, but down through the ranks where the work has to be done? Harry's written about this. I think there's been discussions around the room even this morning about that. Where are we in terms of the, not at your level, but below, at the staffing upside here? Is there a clear path that can emerge here?
So maybe I'll start, and this does get into Treasury Board Secretary, depending on how we take it. But inside D&D, we're actually growing on the board, so we're on the right track. They're hard to find, no doubt, and you're right, they don't come out of school very fast, so you do have to grow them to a certain extent inside. I think if you explain the type of work that you're doing, working on some of our more complicated projects, it's exciting work. Have we nailed down the career path, so once they master that, they see a career path as something bigger and better? I think that's the question for inside defense, yeah, we're following up. The only point I'd make before we pass it to Michael is there's a lot of people who work on procurements who don't necessarily know they're working on procurements. When you're in options analysis, you probably don't think you've got a procurement today. You think it's not setting up my capabilities. But there's a tie there to procurement. And we probably don't do a good enough job around educating those folks on the procurement system just so they understand kind of broader
technical training. Your options analysis has down 3 weeks.
That's
massive.
You got it.
We are doing more kind of open competition for procurement officers to try to open up the what might have been passed on the closed recruitment model to obtain the knowledge and skills they need. There are programs out there that are kind of popping up. There's an interesting model that just was on the project management sort of Treasury Secretary is just doing some interesting work around competencies, trying to develop kind of a modern competency set for procurement officers. I think it'd be very helpful for them driving training programs, that sort of thing. We're also looking at having the Canada School of Public Service take a look at our own training tools within PSDC to ensure that they are up to date with kind of modern procurement environment. There's no kind of easy solution to this one, but we do really have to focus on making sure we're flexible in recruitment, and making sure our training is up to date as possible. But there certainly can be a career path. There's more than enough work to do in this space. So there certainly can be a career path.
Yeah, sure.
You're listening to an episode of Defense Deconstructed on the CGAI Podcast Network. These engaging conversations from the front lines of policy and politics are brought to you by the Canadian Association of Defense and Security Industries.
Murray, you've heard these discussions. longer than the rest of us who have been on this panel, I would think you're probably the veteran of this group. Is there something different here?
Well, there are some really innovative ideas that are coming forward. Dave asked me to come and sit on the panel to explain from the media perspective, but I would also like to extend that somewhat to the general public perspective, because the question we're being asked to answer here today is how do you measure success with the defense policy when it comes to procurement? And there is an old adage that you're probably all familiar with, but it is something that I think a lot of journalists that cover the nexus of politics and the defense establishment and procurement appreciate. And that old adage is justice not only needs to be done, but it needs to be seen to be done. So not only do we need to hear about all of these good projects and all of these good ideas, but we actually have to see it in motion. And one of the questions Dave asked me in a note to prep me for this was to answer is like, how is procurement communicated? And as Ian so gently pointed out, I've been around for a while. And I can say that in general, it is very poorly communicated. It's poorly communicated from my perspective because there is an institutional reluctance to talk. And I can say with a great deal of assurance that this is not something that is a political thing. It is not liberal or conservative. It transcends government. And one of my pet peeves, as an example, is I don't know why the PSPC has to announce major decisions and major projects, often major milestones, such as CSE, on Friday. How many of you here watch The West Wing? What did The West Wing used to call Fridays? Fridays was take out the garbage day. And that's not what it is, because there are some really interesting things that the government is doing. But the strategy seems to be to want to avoid public discussion. At least that's my perception of it, and I know it's a perception of my colleagues. The best example that I can give you is when the Joint Support Ship Program, version 1, was shelved. You'll never guess when that was announced publicly. It was announced publicly on a Friday night just before the 2008 federal election at 8:34 p.m. How I know that is because I was sitting on my front porch enjoying a cigar and a scotch, which is my reward to myself from surviving the week in Ottawa. And my desk sends me a note, so there's a release on Canada Newswire, and we can't make heads or tails. What is the government doing? 8:34 on a Friday night. The other problem that we often have is that there are some journalists that have this defense specialty, myself, David Crazy, others in the media, and we will often come and ask very detailed, precise questions. We're also very very selective in what we focus our attention on. And often what ends up happening is you ask a whole bunch of questions only to get either media response lines, which mean nothing. They don't answer your question. Or my favorite was one from a few years ago when I was asking questions about the close combat vehicle procurement, and I asked a dozen detailed questions, and I got one line back. And it was all done by email. There was no interaction. There was no briefing. So if you want the media and the public to understand better what is happening in procurement, you have to talk about it. Now, I don't want to sit up here and tell me I'm grousing and complaining, because I do know that there are projects and there are things that the government has done that are absolutely inspired. And I will say
that the National Shipbuilding Program was an important program for Canadians, because the government of the day decided that there is an industry that is a key industrial asset that we as a nation have to hold on to. And I would largely think, I don't know how many of you followed coverage when it was announced, but when it was announced, it was largely greeted with positive press. But then we've had a number of years go by, and we know that there have been challenges to get the program up and running. There are to get the shipyards ready. There was a vacuum. There was silence, well, virtual silence throughout that whole time, even though sometimes you'd be asking questions about it. And I know from following not only access to information documents, but leaked documents as well, that there are folks within the system who are advocating for more communications, talking about this. It just never seems to happen. So I think that that is a very important point to make to you folks who are invested in this, because I think that the more dialogue and disclosure, the more confidence that there's going to be in the system and in the decisions that are going to be made. And I'll just add a quick aside to say that there is this reflex that if we shouldn't discuss bad news and, oh, like we're going to get bad headlines because this program is being delayed for very, you know, understandable reasons. But I am of the opinion, and I'm a journalist saying this, I'm of the opinion that if you explain it to the Canadian public, most people are fair-minded people. And if you give them a reasonable explanation, they'll go away happy, and it will not be a political issue. It may be an issue down the street for a day or two, but most people will have, you know, will cut you some slack, especially when they understand that you're trying to be prudent with their money and you're trying to get the right equipment. The other thing that they've asked me to communicate, and Ian touched on in his opening, is that I would like, this is a direct quote from Davis earlier this week, I would appreciate some thoughts about how much historical experience and factors into how I cover things. So, just a little bit of background, I was here in Ottawa and covered the cancellation of the EH-101. I was on the dock when they announced submarines, the purchase of the Upholder class. Quick story, in 1997, I wrote about safety replacements, and to my horror, in 2013, as I was writing about whether the government was going to continue or not with the cyclone program, I came across a story that I had written on April 23rd, 1997, where you could pull entire blocks of text out of what I had written in 97 and put it into the 2013 stories. So all of that to say is that the experience of journalists such as myself, David Puglisi, Matthew Fisher, and others who have covered this for a long time, it's a double-edged sword. And there are journalists who are covering military procurement one day and then having to cover Supreme Court the next. But then there is a small cadre of us who are able to ask more in-depth questions. And I'm not arguing for special treatment. I mean, I see some of my colleagues in the back from the special magazines. They should also be included in this. But those that are writing about defense, there needs to be constant engagement, not constant make-work projects, but constant engagement and constant dialogue and backgrounding or those sorts of things, so that the stories do get out there. And I'll leave it here, but only just to say that there is a lot of perception about the media, and that people have a tendency to talk about what I call the polls, which are, it negative story or it's a positive story. I can give you a little bit of insight from a journalist's perspective. We don't look at stories as either they are negative or positive. We look at stories as they're either interesting, they're either compelling, they're worth the time for your readers or your viewers. You're telling them something important, or they are boring. Now, the good news is, for those who are scared of the media, procurement with editors, and because it is so process heavy, most editors, when you pitch them a procurement story, have a stunned chicken book. So, but the challenge that you're going to face in communicating the successes of Strong, Secure, Engage are going to be to tell compelling stories, tell interesting stories, stories that are important to the readers. Because in the end, you're asking somebody to take 5 minutes of their day to read an online story or to sit for 2 minutes to watch a television piece or to click on it. So it's not a negative or positive game to us. It's either you're telling something interesting and important or it's boring. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. I should also say, I just said by way of introduction, in all of the downsizing and challenges of the media environment, in particular the resizing of the parliamentary press gallery, I think defense is the only area that still has a beat report assigned to it. I think between you and David, now that Matthew's moved off, I can't think of another department that has two folks who are working on their stories full time.
It depends upon the newsroom. I can say that I have been very fortunate throughout my career when I was at Canadian Press to be able to focus for 12 years while I was there in the Ottawa Bureau exclusively on defense. I covered defense when I was in Halifax as well. But at CBC, there is still a beat system, and the beat system is there for not only defense, but it's there for environment, it's there for health, it's there for security. The Canadian Press is the same thing. I can't speak to a lot of the other organizations, such as Post Media. I do know that they have their specialists, but I mean, I could probably give you an entire master class in how the media has changed and the expectations are different. When I started with the Canadian Press, there used to be a separation between church and state, which was you're either a reporter or you're a broadcast reporter. In 2000, you expected to do both. While I was in Afghanistan, I did print, radio, shot photographs, and I shot video. At the CBC right now, I'm expected to do online, radio, television, and after I leave here, I'll podcast. So that is an example of how the media has changed. And it influences what you see, trust me, and hear.
Nicholas.
Thank you, Ian.
You have the, not just the industry perspective, but from the industry association, you have to take the longer view of this as well. Why don't you give us your 5 minutes on this?
Thank you. So in terms of what SSC procurement success looks like for Canadian industry, there's the cynical view that would have industry saying that more is never enough. And I have a slightly more measured definition to propose. And you know, we certainly agree that getting projects out the door, spending the money that Parliament has appropriated for EV capital is pretty basic to success. Now, that's easy to say and hard to do. However, you know, I've yet to hear industry executives say that the procurement system, both within B&D and the other implicated departments, are going to be able to deliver on the ambition in SSE and the investment plan. And you know, time is one of those things that is against us in this. Industry would agree that, you know, a lot of the plumbing that needs to be done to unlock the, you know, eventually seen as a sclerotic procurement system that we have today needs to be done, and we've heard a bit about that. And where industry is part of the problem, we want to be a constructive partner in fixing those bottlenecks. And that takes forums for frank discussion to kind of work those out. That said, in terms of the definition that I'd like to propose, goes beyond procurement output alone. And it's one that that is more outcome measure, and that's the number specifically $14.1 billion by 2026. And that's the number that represents the sales revenue that the defense industry would need to reach to meet the government's own target of growing industry sales by 40% over 10 years. And that target was first announced by the last government in the 2014 value proposition guide. And then it was confirmed by the current government in the 2018 value proposition guide refresh. StatsCan says that industry sales are currently about $10 billion, and they've remained stagnant over the last few years in nominal terms. So how do we get moving towards this target of $14.1 billion in sales? Well, we can look at what the government has, the last few governments have put out in different documents for some inspiration. There's the Defense Procurement Strategy, the Value Proposition Guide, both versions 1 and 2, two separate State of Canadian Defense Industry reports. There's SSC, the Investment Plan, the Announcement of Key Industrial Capabilities. And through all these documents, you start to see the skeletons of a defense industrial strategy emerging. For the first time, we have reliable supply-side data in the State of the Canadian Defense Industry reports, and we have the demand side now with the investment plan. And we have KICS as a forcing function and organizing principle to grow industry and guide procurement. And we have SSE commitments to make historically large capital investments. We have all manner of procurement instruments, value propositions, Canadian content policy, national security exemptions, PCIP. Now we have ideas and innovative solutions, Canada. So the key instruments are also already in place, but they need to be brought to bear in a more coordinated, coherent, collaborative manner to help industry reach that growth target of 40%. In SSC, the government commits to working more closely with industry, and I'm just not sure that we yet have the mechanisms or the governance, or even the will in place mindset to kind of pull all these pieces together. And what industry and government needs to do then is help develop these mechanisms to work together like that. For one, need to bring defense procurement more formally into the government's innovation agenda, essentially the government's economic growth policy, which is a necessary condition and commitment in SSE. And this is going to require some greater cooperation promised in SSE between D&D and ISEC, which needs to be real and demonstrable. And we're also going to need a formal mechanism that brings together industry, which has to be less transactional and more strategic than what we have today. And this kind of a new partnership approach would be necessary to reach the ambitious goals that the government has set to promote industry growth and defense recapitalization. So I think the other thing that we need to do here is measure the progress year over year towards the government's growth target, because as Peter Drucker said, what gets measured gets done. And an export agenda is also another must in all this to reach this growth target. So in other words, you know, big ambitions require more than incremental change to existing defense procurement processes, to interdepartmental cooperation and industry-government relations. And more fundamentally, we require new ways of thinking about fostering industrial development through defense procurement. And if we could get all those elements sorted out, then we'd definitely see
that's a very helpful set of comments, because I want to put it in the context of the string of these conferences. I think, is this our fourth or fifth year, David? I can't remember. Fifth. 5 years ago, at the first one of this series, the message that I think we got from the defense industry side was much like what Corey just said about the media side, which is, we have no idea what we're doing, we don't know what the long-term picture looks like, we can't plan on a six-month turnaround for some of these major capital projects. We need to, you guys need to lengthen out your planning horizons and talk a little bit about what the long term is. We talked about the state of the Canadian defense industry and then the investment, the annual updates or the regular updates to the investment plan. Given that you've got some suggestions for the future, is that enough to be able to close some of the tenor of your discussion? Completely different from the kind of discussion we had 5 years ago. I guess along the path along that, has that helped people
certainly
be able to plan their own capital program?
So, you know, if we take the history of this conference as kind of an annual annual gathering.
Yes.
It's been an incredible journey of policy developments, very active when you look at it over that period of time, where we have many new instruments that have started to be implemented. And so now it's taking it, how can we, instead of having each in their stovepipes, bring them all together towards this common objective around what we can have as a defense industry in 10 years.
It also strikes me from the political side, the continuity here across the election, the change of government, and we're going into an election year, so this will be the last conference probably before the next election. I don't know what the election will bring, since there's enough elections on the political side not to, not to make predictions. Who knows? But my sense is that there's a change of government. I'm not here to speak for any political party, but again, we could see another election that does not upend the apple cart. There'll be some changes here and there, but I don't see major strategic changes. I think it's a strong security gate plan with well thought through in that sense. We got to a point where we might have a national plan here, not just a series of individual governmental plans.
Well, certainly, yeah, it's the evolving consensus within the public service and the political level about this. Yeah, we've survived the change in government with some of these foundational concepts about how industry and how defense procurement can contribute to economic growth and develop and deliver on capabilities as well. And so there's that strong foundation that's bipartisan at this point. And to build on that, hopefully we can continue, because these are, you mentioned, the national shipbuilding strategy, generational in turn, not in terms of term of demand. Otherwise, there'll be too many starts and stops.
Okay. That's a very interesting set of opening discussions.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Defense Deconstructed, part of the CGAI Podcast Network. Our podcast today featured the first panel from our Fall 2018 Procurement Conference held in Ottawa. If you like the show, please remember to give us a rating on iTunes. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. The CGAI Podcast Network is brought to you by our team in Ottawa, and thanks go out to our producer Jared Maltez and Drew Phillips for providing our music. I'm Dave Perry, and thanks for listening to this episode of Defense Deconstructed.